I don't have a direct say in who those people are that are hired as executives, what they do, what the company's actions are. And ultimately, if they made a decision like that and I all of a sudden disagree with it, stock drops, then I want to sell my shares. Right now, it's a moral decision mixed with a money decision. And I've got to decide, am I going to, sell when it's low and lock in those losses? Or am I going to wait it out and see what happens? I don't know. Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Real Freedom. I am your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started on your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We've got lots of great information out there, articles, past episodes, blogs, you name it, to help you find a path of somebody that's maybe been on our show before and might resonate with you, find a topic, a certain area of real estate that you want to pursue that resonates with you. And so that's why we exist here, to be able to highlight awesome people doing great things in real estate and to inspire you to take action. And so today's episode is a little bit different. I try to do some episodes where I get a chance to share some information myself, not have a guest on, and just kind of get a chance to talk about things. And so one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is, we address what are some reasons why people choose to invest in real estate versus investing in other things? And so today, the main focus of our topic, at least at the beginning of the episode, is we're going to cover why people who invest in real estate like the fact that they're in more control of their asset. There's a tangibility to it that you see versus investing in stocks or mutual funds or other things like that that aren't physical, tangible things. And so I'm not saying everybody's not comfortable with it. I should start with a disclaimer. This is not real estate investing advice. This is not investing advice in general. I'm just sharing some examples of some things that people who have invested in real estate seem to resonate with. And so just something for you to think about if you haven't invested in real estate, if maybe you've invested in stocks before, just some things that I've heard from feedback from people about why they really enjoy investing in real estate. That being said, I'll also add a second disclaimer, right? Make sure you diversify because stuff happens. And so if you want to primarily be in real estate, great. If you want to diversify into other areas, great. I will also say inside of real estate, there's lots of opportunities to diversify as well. So that being said, I want to talk a little bit about just that tangibility. And so today's episode, we're actually classifying as from Tesla to Target, real estate versus stocks when executives cause chaos. And so the longer that I've been investing in real estate, the more that I do appreciate that control aspect where I know what my money's invested in. Some of our properties are, an hour away, 2 hours away. Some are maybe 5 or 6 hours away. That being said, I can go touch that property, right? It's a physical thing. Not only is the property itself valuable, the land that it's built on is valuable. There may be times down the road where we decide, hey, you know what? Maybe we knock this property down if it's getting up there enough in years. Maybe the zoning has changed. Maybe some new opportunities have changed. Maybe we acquire a nearby lot and it provides an opportunity to build something. So while the property itself has value, the land that it's built on also has value. And so there's lots of different ways that we can add value to what we own. And so I like that piece. I like the fact that we have a say over who we hire, right, to manage that property. So as of right now, this recording, we've chosen to work with property managers versus self-managing. I think for me, I just, at this point, I really don't have a desire to self-manage. And we have some great relationships that we're trying to leverage more and more of people who do a great job and enjoy managing the properties for us. And so we work hand in hand with them. I like the fact that the person that's responsible for finding tenants and placing tenants has a criteria in place. I can see what that criteria is as it comes to credit, background check, income, that sort of stuff. We have leases that we have control over what's on that lease, what we're asking the tenants to do, what happens if they don't do that. Obviously, some of this stuff is out of our hands, right? Regulations from the city, the county, the state, how they decide to handle tenants is a little bit of out of our control, but we can also then choose to go invest in a state where it does meet our needs. And so just kind of that control piece is really what we're kind of focusing on here. That being said, contrast that with stocks. You know, I don't know what strategy you guys have used in the past for picking stocks or picking mutual funds, or, you know, when you invest in an IRA, you might just pick here's an IRA based on my retirement year, and then they automatically allocate things. And so I know for me and for my wife, when we chose those, I didn't really know what stocks we were investing in. I didn't know where our money was going. Some of it was here locally, some of it was international stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of stuff. And so I didn't really know where my money was. I was just going, picking a stock based on past performance or projected performance or risk tolerance. So I didn't really have a handle on that. And the other thing that's really been a little bit more of an eye opener for me, the more that I invest in real estate, is how we don't have control what happens with these companies that we may invest in, right? We might pick good people and yet things change, right? Like in Apple, when Steve Jobs stepped down, their stock went down. And now I will say, the examples that I'm giving here, once stocks go down, people see, hey, maybe it's on discount. We pick some of those stocks back up. The bigger point here is we have much less control over what happens with some of these companies. And so as of right now, the hot topic as of when I'm recording this is Cracker Barrel, right? So I've got a couple of blurbs here that I'm just going to read from each of these companies that I'm giving examples. So Cracker Barrel, right? August 2025, they launched a $700 million rebranding effort under their CEO, replacing their old logo with a minimalist kind of text-only design with an attempt to modernize the brand, right? And in the interviews, we heard them say, you know, we polled our stores. They really like this modern brand. They really like what we're doing. We've heard great feedback. This goes public, and all heck breaks loose, right? So within days, Cracker Barrel stock plunged 7% on the announcement and ultimately dropped 12% within that day, erasing nearly $100 million in market value. And all this criticism came down, and what ended up happening, they said, hey, thank you so much for giving us our feedback. We are in line with our customers and their wants and needs, and they get to express their opinion. So you know what? Actually, we're going back, right? So $700 million spent on rebranding, that was just an oops. And, you know, for me, those are the stories that resonate with me of like, I'm not confident in that. If I'm choosing something that I have more control over versus something like that, don't get me wrong, I love eating at Cracker Barrel. Our family just went there a couple months ago, really enjoyed it. Awesome restaurant. If I decided to put my money there and something like that happened, now I'm in my low 40s, right? Anything that happens, there's some time to make it up. What if I didn't have time to make that up, right? In my investments. And so that's the thing, that as I get older and older, I like that idea of being more and more control, right? So that's Cracker Barrel. Another example, Bud Light. Bud Light 2023 partnered with a transgender influencer in a promotional campaign tied to March Madness. The move got immediate backlash, leading to widespread boycotts of Bud Light and other beverages that they also owned. And so you had high-profile creators, celebrities, that sort of thing, that were expressing their concern and the financial fallout. So this happened in April, mid-April. Bud Light's weekly sales had plunged 21%. Off-premise sales were down 26% by early May. Revenue fell 10% over the second quarter, and operating profit dropped by nearly 30%. The company potentially lost up to $1.4 billion due to the boycott. Now, whether you enjoy Bud Light, don't enjoy Bud Light, obviously who they hired didn't seem to match well with their brand. So this isn't about who it is. It could be anybody that they chose that the company didn't like. So whether it was a transgender person, whether it was somebody else, the example that I'm giving here, just to be clear, is not about who it was. It's that executives made a decision on the company. I have my money invested in Bud Light. All of a sudden, executives make a decision that tanks the stock price, right? So depending on who it was, right? It could have been Taylor Swift. And, you know, for some reason, people didn't like Taylor Swift being associated with Bud Light, right? So it's not about who it was. It's about the decision that's outside of our control. So that's what I want the focus to be on here. It's a decision that's outside of our control. Dropped $1.4 billion in sales, potentially, due to that decision. Another example, example number three here, we've got Tesla. So Tesla's had a couple here in the last few years. So we've got September 2018, Elon Musk appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience and took a puff from what was described as a marijuana and tobacco joint. Immediate backlash. The following day, Tesla stock dropped roughly 6% by close and had fallen as much as 9% throughout the day, making it one of the sharpest single day declines in months, right? So CEO goes on a podcast, commit some sort of action, right? Agree or disagree, doesn't matter. And all of a sudden, boom, potential 9% of your, you know, let's say you put $100,000 into Tesla. Now you're at $90,000, right? And so over time, right? I'm kind of leaning at more of the short-term decision here. Over time, that changes. June 2025, we all know about Elon Musk's relationship with President Trump. You know, Trump announced the big, beautiful bill, and Elon came back and said it was a disgusting abomination that slashed crucial electric vehicle tax credits and threatened government contracts. And so that clash, Tesla's stock tumbled approximately 14% in a single day, marking the largest one-day drop in years and wiping out an estimated $150 to $152 billion in market value, right? Political disagreement, $152 billion in value of this company. Now, what changed in that company? And in some of these cases, right, the value of the company, it's still the same company, but it's the public perception, it's the media backlash and all that kind of stuff. It's that sends these stocks all over the place that causes concern. And then the last example that I wanted to give here is Target. So January 2025, Target announced it would phase out several long-standing DEI initiatives as part of its new branding strategy. Sharp backlash, civil rights leaders, socially conscious consumers protested a 40-day consumer boycott. Target stock fell roughly $27 per share, collectively erasing $12.4 billion in market value. And in February, the state of Florida filed a lawsuit accusing Target of misleading shareholders about risks tied to its DEI changes. And so additional follow-up from that. So the reason I give a few of those examples is think about what you're investing in. I want to be clear, I'm not endorsing or not endorsing any one of these companies, any one of these people that were mentioned. It's more about, I don't have a say in that decision and what happens. I don't have a direct say in who those people are that are hired as executives, what they do, what the company's actions are. And ultimately, if they made a decision like that and I all of a sudden disagree with it, stock drops, then I want to sell my shares. Right now, it's a moral decision mixed with a money decision. And I've got to decide, am I going to, you know, sell when it's low and lock in those losses? Or am I going to wait it out and see what happens? I don't know. And so that's what I want to talk with you about. If you've considered, you know, investing in real estate and you feel like real estate is risky, go back to these, right? There's a lot of risk in investing in the stock market. Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. And so what I do want to close with the episode with is just share a few of the things of how you can feel in control of your investment, right? So I've covered this before. It doesn't change, right? The cool reasons to invest in real estate don't necessarily change over time. It's kind of the tried and true. Cash flow from rental income. Residential or commercial properties, right, generate income. You control rent pricing. So if I want to try to squeeze out a little bit more of rent, I can do that. If we're making the mortgage payments, we're hitting what we want to hit and we don't have to increase rents, I don't have to increase rents, right? I can work with my property manager and I can set that strategy. Tenant selection, right? I get to control how strict or lenient I am on tenant selection. Who are the people that I'm allowing? Now, that being said, we can't discriminate, right? So we have a universal boundary of here's who we're selecting, or here's who we're, you know, here's kind of the criteria of who we're selecting. And as long as those people fall within that, right, you're either accepted or you're not accepted. And so you have the power to be able to do that. You also have the power of expenses, right? Trash company bills getting a little high. I can go call out to other trash companies and find out if I can save some money. If I want to, you know, implement something else, something like solar panels, right? I get a decision. Do I want to put solar panels on the top of my building that might save me money down the road? load, what types of light bulbs I use, how I want to control utility costs, whether I pay it, the tenant pays it, right? I am in control of that decision. Now, there's some costs associated with it, but I get to be the one that makes those decisions about how my asset is performing. Appreciation and value, right? Number two here, real estate typically appreciates over time, right? Short term, sometimes there's blips, right? Stocks, there's blips. Real estate, there's blips. But over time, we tend to see that those values appreciate. A stock may not necessarily appreciate if it's, you know, a stock that's, you know, going down, like a Blockbuster Video or something like that. When it's starting to go down, you don't have a say over how it goes back up, right? And so in real estate, sometimes those values go down. Over time, though, they tend to bounce back. And so if I pick a bad stock, I can't get that chance to get my money back necessarily. In real estate, if I can choose to wait longer, those values tend to recover. I am a shining example of that. Our very first rental property that we had, or our first property we had, we turned into a rental property because the value got cut in half, right? I didn't have control over that. I decided to hold for the next 10 years and values came back and we ended up turning that bad story into a great success because we made money at the end of the day because we held on to it. So that's the appreciation in commercial property. So kind of reason number three here why I like investing in real estate, forced appreciation. In commercial real estate, it's really income goes up, expenses go down, and the value of the property goes up. So if I want the property to be worth more, how do I find ways to increase income? How do I find ways to decrease expenses? And for those that maybe haven't known or looked into commercial real estate, right, there's a cap rate. And that cap rate helps to dictate kind of the price of the property. And so I can have control over that cap rate by how I manage the property, the expenses that I choose. I can also choose if I want to get more rents, maybe I sink some money into it. I put in some new floors, put in some new kitchens, dishwashers, improve the landscaping, help the curb appeal, make more tenants want to come in there, maybe be willing to pay a little bit higher price. I have control over that through the decisions I make working with our property manager. Tax benefits and deductions, right? There's a lot of great depreciation. I'd love to talk more about the tax benefits. It's a little bit more tricky because everybody has different situations. For us personally, the more property that we own, the better our taxes have turned out, right? We have more depreciation. We do cost segregation studies, which accelerates that depreciation during the hold period and so puts a little bit more cash into our pockets. And so there's some great benefits there. You get to deduct the interest, 1031 exchange, right? If there's a taxable event, we can defer that by choosing to do a 1031 exchange. So there's a lot of great tax benefits and deductions out there that we can take advantage of. Equity buildup, right? This is kind of a sneaky little one, which I love. With every mortgage payment, you increase your ownership stake. So for me, going back to my initial townhouse example, because we were kind of stuck, right? And we had to hold onto the property, the rent was basically covering the expenses every month. So we were kind of cash flow neutral, but every month when I would go look at that mortgage statement, I'd see it go down by $200, $300. Then it was like $350. Then it was $400. When we sell that property, you see those benefits, right? You may not see it month to month, but it's a lot harder to set aside $400 a month to save than to have somebody paying off your mortgage and that $400 is going back into the bank over time, right? Now on some of our larger apartment buildings, I'm seeing $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month. Now we're sharing that with other owners, but that's the amount of principal that's being knocked off those mortgage payments every single month. And so it's that slow stuff, right? Real estate, get rich a little bit more slowly, but all these little buckets, all these little cool things that are happening compound over time. Hedging against inflation. So this is number six on my list here. As inflation goes up, we have a little bit more control over that because the cost of living might go up. So we might be able to increase rents. So it's just a little bit of a hedge against inflation there by owning rental property. Portfolio diversification, right? So I can diversify the types of properties I invest in, the areas I invest in, the asset classes that I invest in. I could invest in a single family home in Washington. I could invest in a multifamily property in Florida. I could invest in a mobile home park in Maine, and I can invest in a hotel in California. Didn't even mean to have the Hotel California reference. I just came up with that one on the fly, right? You can choose all those different asset classes and you can diversify yourself. So lots of different things that you can do within housing to be able to diversify yourself. And then syndications, right? So syndications is an opportunity to be more passive. Now, that being said, anybody who's invested in our syndications has my phone number, my email address and probably can find my mailing address and show up at my door and say, what's going on with the property? And me, hopefully being a good syndicator, will answer them, right? Do you have the CEO of Target's cell phone number, email address, and address where you could go talk to them if you're like, hey, stock's down a little bit. What are you planning on doing here? Right. And so while in a syndication, there's more of a passive feel to it, you maybe don't have direct control over each and every decision. You're getting updates and you can call. And if you're pissed at me, you can call me and tell me you're pissed at me and I'll listen to your feedback. And then my job is to be able to be a representative of you and to honor the strategy that we've put in place for how we are going to manage that asset. And then upon sale, you know, return that capital back to you and decide what you want to do with it afterwards. And so there's an ability over time for that to grow more and more passive, to have more and more income coming in consistently. So those are some of the reasons why I feel like for people that maybe haven't invested in real estate or haven't done much of it, you actually do have a lot more control over what happens than you think you do. And so just contrasting that to stocks, like I mentioned, the examples that I gave are more public examples. Yes, I totally understand stocks go down. Sometimes they go back up. It's just that feeling of I don't have control or I have much less control over what happens in a real estate that I wanted to highlight here for you. And so if you're considering investing in real estate, if you're kind of toying around with what do I do, what asset classes, I'm always here to help. If you go to freedomthroughrealestate.com, we have all this information. There's ways where you can reach out to me, connect with me. Happy to guide you through, happy to answer questions that you have. And so that wraps it up for today. From Tesla to Target, real estate versus stocks when executives cause chaos. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It's once again, like I said, the information as far as why invest in real estate, that doesn't really change and it's not planning on changing, but it's also good to be reminded why I do what I do, why I continue to invest in real estate and why I'm sold on the benefits of this versus other asset classes. And I know, like I said, we're gonna diversify, we're gonna do different things, but for me, that's the reasons why I love real estate. If you've got any questions, feel free to reach out. Like I said, go to our website. Let us know if you have any questions. And hope you guys have an amazing day.
The government was giving basically free money to purchase businesses. And so I'm already in real estate. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. My assets were working for me at that time. And I started vetting companies to buy because, you know, that I could run virtually and basically just kind of augment my lifestyle another time to get more freedom, more time, and more leverage on my finances. And so after vetting over 100 companies, I landed on US Lead List.
Welcome to the Real Freedom Show, where we inspire you to pursue your passion to gain time and financial freedom through opportunities in real estate. I'm your host, Mike Swenson. Let's get some real freedom together. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Real Freedom, Real Estate Leverage Freedom, where we talk about different ways that people can build time and financial freedom through different opportunities in real estate. I am your host, Mike Swenson. If you want to get started or you're trying to figure out which path to take or what to do for your real estate journey, your real estate investing journey, check out our website, freedomthroughrealestate.com. That's freedomthroughrealestate.com. We have lots of great content on there for you to kind of figure out what's a great path based on your passions, based on your skill set, based on your time available. And it's a long journey. It can change over time and you never know which path your journey is going to take. And so that's why we love highlighting different people, sharing their stories. So today we've got Micah Nichols on. Micah is the president of US Lead List. So we're going to talk a lot about getting leads, working with leads, trying to figure out ways to get business and get deals for you guys. And so we're certainly going to talk about that. Micah's also going to share kind of his background. And so we've got a very exciting episode for you and excited to dig in. So Micah, we're so excited to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, man. It's always a pleasure to come on and chat with cool people who like sports more than I do, or at least American sports. I'm a soccer fan. I didn't tell you that earlier, but anyway, so yeah, I really appreciate you having me.
Go ahead, just get started, kind of share your background and kind of your experience in real estate, and we'll go from there.
So it all kind of started before real estate. You know, the freedom thing is what I was always searching for. I had kids when I was really young. So I think I had my first kid when I was 22. And then we had three kids in succession, basically 2 years apart. So I was, mid-20s, three kids, and I had a crappy W-2 job that I was just stuck grinding in. And I think from the beginning, from kind of inception of the character of who I am, I've always been an entrepreneur. And so, I always had some side hustle, from construction to selling wood to I had a, pig farm. Like, I had a sawmill, all sorts of things. And so I tried dozens of things, and really what moved the needle for me, and why I'm passionate about real estate and love it, is like, it gave me the freedom where I could actually, fire myself from my job, and live a life closer to what I always wanted, which is like more time with my family, more freedom to do what I want, more ability to kind of, I guess, explore the curiosities of life, which is for me what I get excited about. I don't get excited about going to work for other people, and I'm assuming most of the listeners here don't either. And so, anyway, here I am, 25. I've got three kids. My life is crazy. I'm overloaded, too much work, not enough money. And about that was close to, like, 2013. 2015, I bought my first rental property. It was a fourplex in rural Wisconsin, and I paid a whopping $52,000 for that. And so, it was on market deal. Back then, you could still find really good cash flowing on market deals. That's not really the case anymore. But all of a sudden, like, I think, I paid 52,000. It was generating gross, about 2,000 a month. And I was cash flowing like 1500 bucks. It was like pretty much like half of what my income was. And I'm just like, start doing the numbers in my head. I'm like, man, if I could just do a couple more, like, I could, like, move on. I could do better things. And so, the next month, I bought a five unit for 90,000. That one made something like 3,200 bucks a month. And I got pretty close to offsetting, my income with that, more passive, real estate investing. The people who sell it to you as, fully passive are either syndicators and they're telling you the truth, they just want your money so they can put it into a deal, or they're lying to you, because being an active real estate investor, there's still work. You still have to maintain, you have to make sure you're getting paid, you have to keep track of your property manager, whatever it is. And so for me, I juggled my W-2 job and I managed these properties, and I literally just pushed everything back into them because they were, the prices I mentioned, they were in rough shape. So anyway, I made them nice and grew that. And once I kind of saw that formula, I just started trying to figure out other tools, other ways that I could invest, make money with real estate. And so, learn about wholesaling, learn about wholetailing, and just kept on adding kind of more tools to my real estate tool belt. And it's crazy, you kind of mentioned this. It's like, just when you think you understand all the concepts around real estate investing, like, lo and behold, there's this like other thing that comes to you, like, I had no idea about this. I've been in this space for a decade. Like, I can make money in real estate doing that. Like, are you kidding me? And so it's fun because you're absolutely right. There's so many different ways that you can monetize and have fun and make money in real estate. Anyway, so I just started doing a few deals here and there. Every year, I still have my W-2. I'm still managing those properties, and I eventually quit my job and started a business. I was doing the lowly work of overhead garage door. So I started a garage door company, and I was doing that, and it gave me more flexibility and freedom, so I could chase real estate when I needed and wanted to, and then I would do my construction work. But in 2020, I hurt my back really bad. Doing that kind of work, it's super physical, and so I found myself in a position where I literally couldn't get out of bed for 9 months. I was just horizontal. And then, at the same time, COVID is happening, just kind of started up. And so for me, I was left in a predicament. Like, what do I do? I still have bills to pay. I still have to, feed my family, and I'm stuck in bed. And so, I did a few things, but in that process, at the time, the government was giving basically free money to purchase businesses. And so I'm already in real estate. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. My assets were working for me at that time, and I started vetting companies to buy because, that I could run virtually and basically just kind of augment my lifestyle another time to get more freedom, more time, and more leverage on my finances. And so after vetting over 100 companies, I landed on US Lead List. And so these two guys, they were in their 70s. They started it in, 2006, I think. They were ready to retire, and I ended up working out a deal where I, took over the company, and we worked out terms, and basically ran with US Lead List from there, and have been helping people find and concentrate their marketing resources by finding kind of the right targets at the right time for the last 5 years. And so that's, my story in a nutshell. Obviously, I brushed over a lot, but that's how I got started with US Lead List, and that's the origin story of kind of real estate and now where I'm at this point.
I've mentioned this before. People, if you're listening to this and you're outside of real estate, the key is like just get in and get started somewhere. I think people spend a lot of time figuring out like the perfect step that they want to make into real estate. And it's like, no, your journey, it's just find a way to get in, find a way to get some experience to figure out what you like. For you, it was a couple of properties. A couple of properties led to something else and thinking about different things. And then, you wouldn't have ever come in probably like, oh, I think I'm going to buy a company and run across US Lead List. But it's because you were doing other things inside of real estate. You learned a little bit more. You're looking for kind of ways to add income, consistent income. And so I think, for other people too, realizing like, yeah, you can buy businesses inside of real estate, work things out. There's people that own companies that are looking to retire, and there's people like you looking to take over companies too. And so there's just lots of good opportunities. And so interviewing all these people over time, I just hear these great stories of your path is going to take different turns. But because you did something to get started and you kind of, got into the real estate space, other opportunities open up, and knowledge that you gain from inside of real estate can help in different ways. Different relationships you have can benefit you in multiple ways. And so come on over for people that are still outside of real estate and want to get in real estate. Just get in.
Even if you mess up, my biggest failures have turned into my largest successes. You just have to be the take the initiative to start doing something, mess up, grind it out. Maybe it's a win, maybe it's a loss, but at the end of the day, if you sit and watch from the sidelines, like, you're not going to move anywhere. You're going to end up in the same place you were.
So talk a little bit about going through the process. So, taking a step back, maybe not necessarily, US Lead List, but in terms of analyzing businesses, I hear more people doing that as a way to, I can buy properties, I can get cash flow. Cash flow is a little bit trickier to find sometimes now. Would love to buy a property for $50,000 or $90,000 now. However, maybe a good move might be to get into buying a company, getting inside the real estate space as a way to then get you out of your W-2, build some cash flow, and then maybe you can build that up and use money to invest. So talk a little bit about that process for you. I know you kind of touched on a little bit, but the why behind that, kind of what you were looking for in companies, and then now, what you're doing, your day job, right, really helps to build and grow wealth or build partnerships, relationships, connections with other people. And so you are kind of double dipping your time with what kind of your day job is versus your other interests.
That's a large question. I'll tell you what it was like for me and what I was specifically searching for. At first in my search, I was kind of just agnostic. I would look at anything. I'd work with these business brokers and, just look at the P&L and what the revenue is doing, the different kind of angles that these guys had on making money, and just tried to familiarize myself with, like, one, just kind of the spreadsheets. Can you read a P&L, like, the numbers of the business? Because you're not buying the numbers from the past. You're buying the ability for this business to generate revenue for you in the future. And so I think you always have to kind of frame where, you know, what this business can do for you going forward. And so, you know, everything that you're going to see is all based on what it's done in the past. And so there are a lot of businesses that, like, you know, on first glance, they look great. They look, you know, they're making all this money, and it's just like, okay, but where's that industry heading? Where is my unique positioning in that space, in that geography? Because for me, I was looking at mostly remote businesses that I could run from anywhere, and you know, that was one of the prerequisites that I set, that, you know, just kind of filter it down a little bit. And so, you know, I looked at, you know, it's literally everything, franchises to, you know, whatever it was. And so there's a lot of different ways to kind of mince that apart. So after looking at, like I said, over 100 different P&Ls, 100 different companies, basically propositions for me to buy them, I started to just develop, like, you know, a sense of what I wanted, what this business could do for me. And I think that's the most important part, right? It's like, if you don't know what you want a business to do for you, you could end up being in the middle of something that you don't really want to be a part of. And then it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like a W-2 again. You're like, you're trapped. You bought this company. You
You
got your
bought a W-2 instead of somebody else
exactly.
giving you a W-2.
Yep. Yeah. So you have to be careful there. And there's nothing wrong with that if it's a step in the process, right? And it's like, you can always hire yourself out. You can move on, so you can move on to better things. But anyway, for me, why this company was so exciting to me is, like, you know, I already mentioned that the owners, they were in their 70s. We run a digital business. You know, our product is digital. It's, you know, records. And they were running it from paper. Literally, they would take their orders by paper. That, you know, they would hand run all the credit card, you know, basically all of those things. And so for me, outside looking in, it was already in real estate, which, you know, I love. You know, I've always liked real estate. It's always drawn to me. I just get excited when I think about it. So, you know, that checked a really big box. And then two, there was a really good way that I could add, and I guess add value to the company and take myself out of it at the same time. So the first thing I did when I bought this company was I automated, you know, 90% of the processes that took place that these two owners basically ran themselves. So now, you know, the process of what the, there are many that we still have to kind of work through, integrate with. But the big heavy lift, like, it's, we don't have to do it anymore. It's done. Our software does it for us. We custom built software. And so all of a sudden I, like, freed up a job. You know, it's instead of two people running that, now it's one, and I can hire a teammate to do that other part. And I get to kind of sit on the top, and I get to steer where the ship is going, and I don't have to be part of the work. And, you know, for me, I think that's what the ultimate form of business is. It's like, you don't have to be in the messy grind. You've got time to, you know, hang out with cool people like Mike and have a great conversation around what it is. And you don't have to be bogged down by the work. People are working for you, get to leverage other people's time. And so I, you know, for me, that's kind of what I was pushing for. That's what I wanted. I didn't want to be in the mess of, in the middle of everything. And that's kind of what we achieved. And so now I kind of split my time between, actively work on real estate deals, and then I manage my team who does most of the work on the business side.
It's leverage, right? It's exactly what we're talking about. Talk a little bit about US Lead List for people wondering, what the heck is it? What do you guys do? What's the value proposition there? Dig in a little bit more on that.
I mean, at its core, we're basically trying to help people concentrate their marketing resources so they're, you know, basically in front of the right people at the right time, so they can transact more deals. And we do that on the data side. And what I believe we are better at than anyone else is we align death and real estate ownership. And so I'm sorry, it is morbid. You know, the whole premise of it is, like, it's, you actually are inserting yourself into a tragic situation. But on the flip side, If you were to take our data and to basically look back 2 years, 50% of all of the records that we have, they sell their property. That is a huge, huge concentration over just, if you were to basically shotgun market, hit everyone in an area, you're concentrating your marketing dollars way, way more of people who are going to transact. And, that's really at its core what we're trying to do. Buy more properties and spend less on marketing. And so we basically generate a national list of properties that that someone passed away and they're the owner. And we build that every single month. And it's kind of like a data as a service or a data subscription. So, let's say you're in the Twin Cities, right? So like Hennepin. So in Hennepin County, you're one of three people. We only sell our data to three people at any given time. And so you're one of three people there. You get a list of 200 people who had those two, conditions. Someone passed away and they own real estate, and we give you that list, and then you market to it to find off-market properties.
Pretty simple. And I know for a lot of people, yeah, I mean, chasing the deal, chasing who's actually going to sell, like that's a tough deal. And so, like you said, if you can put yourself in front of the best audience that has a high likelihood to sell, that's a big deal. So are these people that might be interested in these lists, are they people making cash offers? Are they flippers? Is it kind of anybody and everybody in between? Who are kind of your targeted audience here?
As far as customers go, most of the time we're dealing with three people: realtors, investors, and a hybrid of both. And so, it's somewhere in that spectrum. Locally, I work with my partner. He's a real estate agent. And so we kind of come at it from both angles. I'm the cash offer guy. He's the, on market agency side where he's offering, nicer property. They don't want to sacrifice equity for convenience. And so he's like, hey, absolutely, we'll list this property for you, get it sold. And then, whereas for me, I'm basically chasing down the places that, they've got pain, the property's in crappy shape. We work to make a cash offer that works for them and, transact from there.
Because I was curious, we always talk about, selling grandma's house, right? It could be hoarder, who knows what kind of condition. Certainly those types of properties, I've worked on some real estate teams that, work with an older clientele base, and it's sometimes those properties are a challenge. And yet in a market like this, you find a buyer who wants to buy it, fix it up. There's a ton of value there. And so being able to get something off market at a great price, or like you said, to your point, somebody who wants to list it, depending on the condition of the property, there's, yeah, seems like a lot of great needs that you guys can help fill.
And so that's our core product. We do other things too. We do skip tracing. I kind of act as an ad hoc consultant. And so I meet with our clients regularly. I basically just help market, help find more traction in lead gen in real estate. Because I mean, at least right now it's shifting a little bit, but finding buyers isn't that hard for a good, well-priced property, right? Like there's a lot of people who want a good place to live right now. The hard part is, can you find a property that's off market, that's, needs work or even doesn't need, like what I just got an accepted offer on a property we bought for, I think, 80,000. We're selling it for 150 and we did nothing to it. Zero. We literally just turned it over, put it on the market, and we're selling it that way. So the challenge is, it's like finding those properties that, these people like are willing to sacrifice some of their equity for the convenience of purchasing. And I mean, a lot of it, it's like it's just you just it's a grind, you just got to do it. And so setting up the right systems, basically like making it easier for especially someone who's got a W-2 and kind of lining up all of those things. So that work is happening while they're at their job, and then they get a an opportunity to work on this real estate deal and maybe make their yearly salary in one transaction or more. It's like real estate changes as you go along. Last year, I went through this. It was actually really challenging because I know about developing. I heard about it, like whispers of like, oh, well, how do you take a residential property or a plot of land and turn it in, rezone it, turn it into a multifamily? And so I got this opportunity where it was 4 acres, basically in the middle of Madison, where I live. I live close to Madison, Wisconsin. And this guy, wrote back to one of my letters, which is really unusual. Normally people call, there's a number on there, but he wrote back. And so I wrote him a letter, and then I, skip traced him, and I called him, and then I door knocked him. Like, I chased this guy really, really hard. So I, after the third door knocking, I finally meet this guy. He was a super nice gentleman. But yeah, he had this, like, what was the original farmstead of all of Western Wisconsin, or sorry, Western Madison. And so he had like the last remaining 4 acres of this original farmstead. And his sister passed away. He owned another parcel next to it. And I made this guy 10 offers, literally 10 offers. And the first one was offensive, but fortunately he liked me enough where I got to give him more. And we ended up locking it up for a lot of money, way more than I thought we could pay, because I partnered with someone who knew more about real estate than I did, a developer. And that situation, all of that chasing led to me assigning a deal for the most I've ever done in my career. We transacted last spring, and my partner and I walked with $250,000. We didn't transact. We wholesaled it to another developer, and I mean, like, that's life-changing money. And I didn't even, I'm one of seven kids. We were poor as dirt, man. We had like literally, we had nothing. My dad was a truck driver, and to go from literally having nothing growing up to, doing a deal like that where I'm making, 2.5 times my dad's salary in a day, with the combined work of maybe 20 hours. Like, it is literally mind-boggling. And if you can, I guess, put yourself in a position of opportunity and knowledge and willingness and to grind that out, like, man, the sky's the limit. It's I would just encourage everyone who's listening, it's like, those deals are out there. Like, that's just, one in, hundreds, thousands. Like, the opportunity is there. You just have to put yourself in a position where you can grab it.
Are you looking to get started or scale in real estate investing but don't know your next step? Are you overwhelmed thinking about finding deals, analyzing deals, doing due diligence, and managing properties on top of it? Go ahead and push the easy button and invest with us. Real estate investing is what we do full time. We've done dozens of deals with hundreds of doors. We have the knowledge and experience to handpick the best deals that most investors can't find. We've got large off-market deals all the time where you can hopefully find returns and economies of scale that you just can't find on your own. The best thing is it's 100% passive to you for less capital than you put down trying to acquire a property on your own. Don't let this year go by where you don't make the leap, add to your portfolio, or you just sit in analysis by paralysis. To find out more, visit freedomthroughrealestate.com and click on invest. You can book a call and learn more there. So get to scaling your portfolio now with us by your side. Now, you mentioned the folks that you're reaching out to could be in a few different boats. Like you mentioned, kind of the cash offer, trying to maximize the sales price and all that. You had mentioned about, writing a letter. Kind of what are the marketing techniques there? Because yeah, you're right. You don't necessarily know which offer is going to be the best offer. And I'm not meaning just dollar amount, but in terms of kind of what's going to be best for them. How do you kind of get to that pain point, or how do you get to kind of that ultimate solution where, I look at it as you're coming in as a doctor, right? I've got a prescription here. I don't know what prescription I'm going to write depending on the problems that you have. So how do you kind of find your way through that conversation to figure out what's going to be the most helpful offer to make to them?
That's such a good question, because this is where everyone kind of gets caught up, especially people who are just starting. Because all we care about as investors is like, okay, bottom line, like the numbers. Okay, I got this guy, he wants to sell. He told me he wants to sell, and I make him an offer for 50 cents on the dollar, and I never hear from him again. It's like, okay, well, that's a tactic, and it does actually work sometimes, but I don't think that you're capturing the full opportunity when you approach a situation like that. And so for me, it starts, I send people letters. I do a lot of direct mail. I like direct mail. I like people calling into me saying, hey, yeah, what you're offering sounds good. So my initial letter in my sequence that I'm hitting these people with, I don't even say I want to buy the property. I just say, hey, my name is Micah. I have a question about your property. Give me a call. And well, one, what that does for me is like my response rate goes through the roof. It's like my typical campaigns, if I'm sending a letter that says, hey, I want to buy your property for cash, we can make it really convenient, da 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 da. I'm getting 1 to 2% response rate. With that first letter in my sequence, I'm getting closer to 10% and over 10% response rate. And yeah, like there's a lot of kind of triage, people who actually don't want to sell. But what I get from that letter is like the people who, they didn't have time to premeditate whether or not they want to sell. I'm on the phone with them and it's like, hey, my name's Micah. I'm a local investor. And I was just wondering if you'd consider selling your house, if that's a possibility for you. And from there, the answer, there's three options: yes, no, or maybe. And so those yeses or maybes, from there, I basically just back up. And as soon as they say yes or maybe, I say something to the effect of, okay, well, tell me about your situation. And what I love about that is from a psychological standpoint, that's an open-ended question. They can't say yes or no. They have to elaborate on their circumstance. And that does, two things for you as someone who's trying to get traction in a real estate deal. You're creating rapport, which, you're actively listening, mirroring what they say when it's something important, and you're collecting information. Both of those things are huge wins for you. And for me, like that's how, I start the conversation and I just keep on doing that. Oh, you lost your sister passed away. I'm so sorry to hear that. I don't pretend like I'm empathetic. Like I've lost several people whom I love, and that's a really hard situation. And from there, I just collect information. Like people will tell you, like yesterday, I had a sales call with this guy. I was trying to buy his land. I had him on the phone for an hour, not because I wanted to sit and talk for an hour, but because I just kept on asking him questions that he gave me more information around. So now I know that he owns not just this property, but two other properties that I might be able to buy. And I know his pain points. I know what's hard for him. I know the solution for him. And if you do this right, people will give you literally all the ingredients to solve their entire problem. And all you have to do is mirror it back and put it in a digestible way where they understand. So they've just told you all the ingredients that they need to close. Now you just put it back together in front of them and say, hey, if I were to be able to solve, this lot problem over here, and we could figure out a way to transact part of this other land so you could build that house that you've been dreaming of that you don't even think is possible, would you consider that? All of a sudden, like their eyes light up and like, absolutely. So for me, that's my approach. My sales calls, and I have an acquisition person. They're way, way longer than industry average. We're not trying to get to dollars and cents. We're trying to uncover what the problems are. And as soon as we do, we solve their problems by basically repeating back to them what they tell us.
Yeah, it's certainly a much more delicate conversation to have. And yeah, like you said, built the rapport piece is key. The problem solving piece is key because some people have never gone through that before. They don't know the steps to take. They don't know what the options are. And they're also busy doing other stuff. They've got their own family. Like you mentioned, it's a sister that passes away. That person has their own family and life going on, and they've got to try to take care of wrapping up, what's going on with their sister at the same time. And so if you can help solve problems, that's a incredible value add there to be able to help them.
Yeah, and I didn't really touch as much on rapport, but you can do this with anyone. I mean, it's such a big hack, but it's way more influential to the person who you're speaking with to you basically dive into their world, put everything that you want to say aside and just listen. And then ask another good question, basically kind of waiting on the tips of your toes to hear what this person has to say because they are so important. That is a rarity in the world right now. Everyone's distracted. They've got their phones. Like, You know, I've got teenage kids, they forget my name sometimes because they're so busy. I mean, I jest there, but you know, that's what it feels like. And so if you can put everything aside and focus on someone else's needs, there is an immense power. And you can, you know, create opportunities that just weren't there otherwise by showing up in a way where you make other people feel important.
That's exciting, Micah, to hear what you're doing, how you're legitimately helping people too. Like, I think that's the thing in, you know, in real estate and in the investor world, it's like you're sometimes just focused on chasing dollars, and to show that you can do that mixed with being compassionate, being helpful, being a problem solver, and really making a difference in an important part of people's lives. That's great. It's more than just chasing the deal. It's chasing the deal and helping people at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the folks who are not at least pausing and asking why they're doing, like, money is awesome. You know, it's great. Like, I'm certainly have more net worth since I started real estate than before. But at a certain point, you know, you need better fuel to encourage yourself to move forward and help, like, just be a good person. And for me, I think that, you know, if you can put that first, it pays large dividends.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing. For people that want to learn more about you, learn more about US Lead List, how can they do that?
The US Lead List, I think probably just check on our site, www.usleadlist.com. If folks want to connect with me, Facebook is a good place. It's just my name, Micah Nichols. Search it up. I think I'm tagged on there as you know, real estate investor. But you know, happy to have any conversations, happy to talk about my experience, or maybe I can help someone buy a business. I don't know, but I have a firm passion for enabling other people to move out of their financial kind of stuck place into a place of freedom. So if there's a way I can integrate, I would love to help.
Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your journey, and best of luck to you in the future.